You're listening to The Pulse. I'm Mike and Scott, and we're going to turn to computers now. Not a MacBook or an IBM, not a Dell or a Commodore 64. We're going to head back to the beginning of this era, to the 1970s, and spend a few minutes with what some people consider to be the first commercially available personal computer, a miraculous breakthrough device that wound up being a complete failure. Todd Bookman reports.
I had trouble convincing him that his computer was even worth talking about.
I'm John Blankenbaker. I live in Chadds Ford, Pennsylvania.
I don't know if it's that Blankenbaker doesn't like to give interviews or doesn't think he deserves the attention, or maybe it's just that the computer is from a different time in his life.
I will be 86 years old.
But Blankenbaker did finally give me the okay to come to his house. He greeted me with a gray buzz cut, perfectly pleated pants, a deep red sweater a la Mr. Rogers. And then he started in on his early years in Apache, Oklahoma.
Well, I can remember once that I was curious as to what was in a 22 bullet. So I had found one and took it out on the concrete porch and got a hammer, and I was going to take it apart to see what was in it. I beat on it for a while and it did come apart. Made a loud noise too, scared everyone.
That curious kid would grow up, serve in the Navy, then study physics and math at Oregon State. Then during an internship in 1951, he got to see up close one of the room-sized government computers of the day in Washington, D.C. Well, that helped spark a career, and after a few decades in the private sector, Blankenbaker was finally ready to design his own.
But it had been an idea that was percolating in my mind for several years until 1970. When I had an opportunity to do something on my own. And that was the start of the Kinback computer.
So paint the picture for me. You're in your garage of your sunny California home, and you've got a workbench full of computer parts and a screwdriver and a soldering iron, and you're going to work?
You hit the nail on the head. Yes, it was in my garage. In order to make it a little more pleasant, we put paneling up and made sort of an office, and there was a workbench, oscilloscope, drill press, and I had started in September of 1970, and by the next spring I had a working computer.
Blankenbaker brought that prototype to a conference, but what he showed off would not be mistaken for a computer today. The Kinback One had no monitor, no keyboard, no mouse, no disk drive. The thing looked more like a VCR. It was a foot and a half wide and about 4 inches tall, and on the front, a row of lights and switches, which were used to input data manually into the 256-byte memory. The novel thing about the Kinback wasn't its integrated circuitry or processing speed. It was that it arrived in one piece.
It was a fully assembled and tested computer. Yes, people were buying parts and were building their own computers. And in that sense, they had their own personal computer. And some of them were quite advanced machines. But they were not commercially produced at all.
The Kinback wasn't trying to compete on speed or processing power. It was meant to be an introductory unit, a teaching machine, through which you could learn basic computer programming. And I do mean basic. For $750, just about the best thing the Kinback could do was tell you what day of the week a randomly selected day fell on.
First, you entered 2 digits for the last 2 digits of the year, 2 digits for the month, 2 digits for the day. And the answer was displayed in 8 lights. Light number 0 would light if there was no such day, and light 1 for Monday through 7 for Sunday.
At that first conference, Blankenbaker would ask people in the audience for their anniversary, input it, get the right light to glow, and prove the Kinback actually worked. The response was warm enough.
Then that summer, we prepared to build more, raise some money, and worked on selling some. And by September of 1971, 1 year after the start, I had sold 2 computers, and felt confident enough to move to larger quarters. However, it was not a well-placed optimism.
He went ahead and built 50 units. But the thing to point out right here is that by his own admission, Blankenbaker was not a business guy. He was a tech guy. His mistake was trying to sell Kenbacks to community colleges that he thought could use it as an educational tool. There's nothing wrong with that idea, except schools don't make big purchases without lead time. A budget cycle, sometimes a very long budget cycle, can get in the way. Blankenbaker didn't focus enough on the private market, where he might have had more immediate sales.
Well, after a year, it was obvious that we weren't making enough money. And so it slowly diminished. And I had no plans to go beyond the 50. And I went back to work for someone else. And it sort of just died. It's just the investors took their lump. That was it.
There would be no Kenback too. Blankenbaker has held onto a banker's box full of memorabilia, a few parts, a stack of yellowing stationery for the Kenback Corporation.
There's a motherboard. There was a coding sheet for writing your programs.
Last year, he auctioned off his last two Kenback ones. He says they brought in, combined, enough money to redo his basement.
Oh, no, I have no regrets. Not at all. It was an enjoyable experience. It could have been more successful financially, but I didn't really quite go into this as a financial endeavor or to make money. I just wanted to sort of bring computing to more people. And I certainly, I guess, was a pioneer in showing the way.
Awards for his pioneering spirit sit on the mantle. And the Kenback One lives on in the collection of the Computer History Museum in Silicon Valley.
I've done many things in my life. This is just one of many. And some of the other things I'm just about equally proud of. So I'm happy. I will be departing this life before long. And I'm content.
He may have been hesitant at first, but John Blankenbaker does seem to enjoy talking about his 45-year-old computer. For The Pulse, I'm Todd Bookman.
Did you like this story? Subscribe to our podcast. It's on iTunes.